How are you, Steve?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for joining me on Express Yourself. To begin, how do you personally relate to this film that you've created?
Well, in terms of the end result, it's been an incredible journey. I mean, it's been 7.5 years so far of a very intense commitment towards it. And now when I look back on it, I think the shape of it is very different than I'd imagined starting out, in the sense that, you know, everything that's about it now and the whole journey really revolves around Dave Bald Eagle, the elder who we had play the lead character of Dan within the film. And it's strange because, having made such a huge commitment to a project, in a weird way, it doesn't feel like my film in the way that, you know, most of the others I've done in the past. It feels that somewhat it's, you know, this part of Dave's legacy to share with the world.
And Dave was 95 years old at the time of the shooting of the film. Did he get to see it before he passed away?
Yeah, he did. We did a special showing for him in a beautiful, large, old school theater in Rapid City, and he had a lot of family there and other people from the region and the other lead actors, and so we shared that all together. And then when he spoke to the audience afterwards, he said it's the only film he'd ever been in about his people that told the truth. And, you know, once the film's been out there, and it's been getting a wonderful response from a lot of people and that sort of thing, but regardless of that, you know, Dave's response to it, I think, would eclipse any review or award or any other kind of thing the film could pick up. Just knowing that it meant so much to him meant the world to me.
And in the pivotal scene when the character, an elder named Dan, is narrating sort of what happened at Wounded Knee, I guess that this was Dave Bald Eagle's own words as it came to him.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things that's really crazy for a filmmaker to do. But, you know, it was the last scene we filmed in the movie with Dave. And, you know, we'd been hitting this incredible point of truth between the characters and developing these fascinating relationships. And I knew that what was on the page, both in the screenplay and the novel that it came from, just didn't feel true anymore to where we'd gotten to. They felt somewhat contrived, revolved too much around the author's character and that sort of thing. And the other thing was, we were in an extraordinary position where the actor playing the lead character was even closer to the events of Wounded Knee in 1890 than the character he was playing. You know, Dave's people were the Minicoju of the Cheyenne River Indian Reservation that had fled down to Pine Ridge after the assassination of Sitting Bull, and were massacred down there. So it was even closer link than the character he played. So I truly had him improvise the entire sequence, and he just really spoke from the heart very directly towards Christopher Sweeney, who was playing the character opposite. And at the end of filming those, you know, very powerful minutes, he turned to Christopher and said, "I've been holding that in for 95 years." Yeah, and that's the incredible thing, that, you know, it was filmed in a real close shot. And I think it's an interesting thing in film, an unusual moment for a film, because I think the audience at that point truly feels that they're standing there with him. And it's as close as you could have been to feeling that. I mean, there's such an intimacy and immediacy about how we made the film. And we had a tiny crew, and, you know, we shot very quickly. But because of that, we had this incredible bond between us. It was really like a family. And so because there was no machinery around, and Dave trusted me and I trusted him, he could go there. And I don't think on any other kind of production he could have gone to nearly as powerful a place as that was inside of himself.
How has the response been from the author of the book that this film is based on?
Well, he wrote a series of blogs about it, and he was thrilled. I mean, he sort of said that I took his literary child and made a man of it. And, you know, it's an interesting thing where, you know, normally with a novel, you know, the people that are passionate about it are, you know, so often, you know, disappointed with the adaptations, you know, unless it's a Lord of the Rings or something where they can be quite happy with it. But so often it's disappointment. And invariably it comes around casting. It's the character is not what they had in their minds. And what I have to say with this one is, I went in with such confidence that I wasn't just going to meet what the audience had in their minds, but I was going to exceed it, because that's what they've achieved in this film. And that even goes for the author. I mean, that's what's so special about it. You know, he had been dreaming for, you know, almost 20 years by that point of seeing this film made of his novel. And, you know, truly Dave was more than he'd ever dreamt. And, you know, likewise, the other casting he was thrilled about, and actually thrilled about a lot of the changes we made along the way as well, because he understood that it was coming from a very particular point of truth that we were going for, and that was, you know, the ultimate aim. And so, you know, even the changes he typically embraced, and, you know, a few of them were actually his decision, like changing a black lab to being an overweight corgi, because the black lab's name was Fatback and the corgi had the fattest back of any dog he had ever seen. you know, so as long as the author's endorsing those things, you know, that's fine. That gets the fans of the novel off my back if he endorsed it.
I'm speaking to Steve Lewis Simpson, director of Neither Wolf Nor Dog, a film that's showing as part of the Shining Mountains Film Festival on Monday, October 8th at the Wheeler Opera House. So how did you first get involved with the Pine Ridge Reservation?
Oh, yeah, that was about over 19 years ago I first went out there. I'd been developing a screenplay that partly dealt with the events that led up to the Wounded Knee Massacre and had been building an interest in the area and reading other things about the area. And then very randomly, I was watching the news back in Scotland, and there was a report about a ghost shirt that had been taken from the Wounded Knee Massacre site, and that, as it turned out, had been sitting in a museum in Scotland almost ever since a year after the massacre. And a delegation of Lakota had come over and asked for it to be repatriated. And, you know, I knew at this point with the work I'd been doing that at some point I would make a pilgrimage to Wounded Knee, which is, you know, how it felt to me. And so the moment I saw that, I'm like, okay, that's when I got to go. And I went out there a bit earlier ahead of the repatriation. And, you know, for example, my first 3 hours on Pine Ridge, I was shown around Wounded Knee by a local guy that I bumped into, who then directed me towards a protest camp for a called Camp Justice for a couple of murders that had just taken place in a liquor town bordering the reservation that the FBI weren't giving any serious investigation of. And then I met somebody there who then took me up to the house of Russell Means, you know, arguably the most famous American Indian activist of the 20th century. And Russell was a bit of a hero of mine at that point, and Russell asked me to film 3 days of political meetings that were happening there. And that sort of sucked me into the journey that became making a feature documentary over 13 years about the reservation. And Russell became a very dear friend, and a lot of other people I became very close to. And it sort of spiraled from there. And this is my third feature-length project there. And I'd also was commissioned to make the first original television series for the first 24/7 native channel within the United States a few years ago. So it's been a, you know, pretty layered, expansive journey, certainly the most significant of my creative life and personal life.
Now, the film and the book deals a lot with the author and white protagonist, Kent Nerburn, dealing with how he, as a white person, can write a book about Native issues. I'm curious if you faced some of those obstacles in creating the film or other films you've done previously.
Actually the opposite. And this is true in a sense with Kent and writing the novel. You do get asked. You know, Russell asked me to film those 3 days of political meetings, and then other people asked me to film other people, come over, there's this elder I want you to meet, and all of these sorts of things, and the more footage that we've built up, it came about, well, what are you going to do with this? And it was, you know, put in my lap. And, you know, I mean, in the novel, you know, he gets given this, you know, to write a book, which is a, you know, a process, you know, a bit more straightforward than, you know, the, for example, on and off over 13 years making a feature documentary. So I understood from my commitment how easy it was to end up on that journey. But one of the other things which I think is really interesting is, you know, a lot of the time when people look at the film, they ask about, you know, how was it as a white person telling something that's predominantly culturally native or that sort of thing. But there's one of the things that's actually much more interesting than that to me, which is the perspective that I had on the Nerburn character. because the world isn't in a straight line. And one of the things that I know for sure is that Europeans going into Lakota country like Pine Ridge Indian Reservation have an entirely different experience than the likes of Americans like Kent Nerber. And even though he's embraced in that environment, you know, the friendships we have, the fun we have on the reservations, it's a completely different energy. I mean, most of us Europeans turn up with a big goofy smile on our face, looking for adventure, looking to make friends. And we get such an embrace there. You know, people in the border towns around there think of Pine Ridge as a scary, intimidating place. I've never been so welcomed anywhere in my life. I've never laughed so much and, you know, been, you know, I could knock on somebody's door at midnight and get given a bed for the night. So my experience there was so different that I really managed to get a perspective on him, and especially in the room with elders, for example. I took the real Kent Nerber to meet this wonderful elder who I hadn't seen in many years. And when I phoned him up out of the blue, I hadn't said a word yet. And this elder, 82 years old, he said to me, FBI or CIA? And I was like, neither. It's a movie producer. He just burst out laughing. I went over and visited him, and I just had a blast with the guy. And yet Kent is sitting there the whole time going, I'm with an elder. I have to be respectful. And he had this whole internal dialogue going the whole time. You know, and he talks about there's always the ghost on the wall of history, or dark shadow on the wall from history when there's natives and white people in the room. And I say to him, I disagree entirely. It's when white Americans like himself are on the room because they're projecting it. They've had been fed that, you know, reel of history going over and over in their heads, whereas us Europeans have a completely different perspective. And we just go in and we make friendships and we get embraced. And so that was crucial to this. I mean, characters like the Dan character and the Grover character are so settled in themselves. And the actors that I have playing them, I mean, I knew so clearly who these characters were, as did they. So the culture was always embedded within them. And so I never had any worries about that side of the film.
What do you hope the film accomplishes, or what do you hope people take away from experiencing the film?
Well, first of all, you know, the great feedback I hear all the time is that it makes people laugh and it makes them cry. And at the end of the day, they walk away feeling like they've gone through a really, you know, great emotional journey. And to me, when I think of a lot of my favorite films, you know, the films that made the biggest impact on me, that's what they gave me, whether it's from, you know, City Lights to It's a Wonderful Life to, you know, Dead Poets Society or whatever else. They had all of those elements at play within them. But I think that the greatest thing that we can do as storytellers, whether it's on, you know, broadcasters like yourselves or journalists or novelists or whatever, is just bring understanding together. And empathy is such a powerful thing in this world. And Dave's great gift was through his magic, he opens people's hearts. And people listen through this film to what he has to say through their heart. And that's one of the things that makes it very different, say, to documentary or other art forms. And so, you know, when I hear that sort of cultural reaction, and particularly when I hear of some of the audiences that are packed with both natives and non-natives, and I hear natives talk about how much they appreciated the fact that they're seeing, you know, a lot of these white folks in the audience rooted to their seats until after the lights have come up after the film because they've felt so much, and how grateful they feel that, you know, that they're all at least feeling together through this period of time. You know, and it's like everything in life. All we can do is plant a lot of seeds in the world and, you know, hopefully they all add up to something.
It's the Aspen premiere of Neither Wolf Nor Dog. Will you be attending?
No, I'm actually speaking to you today from my home, which is in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. Oh, so I'm a little far away.
That's quite the distance to travel. Well, in spirit, you'll be there, and we really appreciate that you've made this film and that we get to experience it. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just want to actually mention that, though, I gather that there will be some of Dave Bald Eagle's family at the showing, and hopefully I think they're going to say a few words about it and about him there. So that, I think, would be, you know, kind of a special addition to the event. And I think there's also some other performers because it's part of this expanded event. So there'll be a little more, you know, added entertainment than just the film itself.
How was the experience of working with Dave throughout the film?
He was a joy. I mean, he just was, you know, I think he was fearless in many ways. I mean, you know, things he'd done in his earlier in his life sort of indicated that too. But, you know, taking this on at 95 and not blinking with it sort of was a part of that. You know, he had a great sort of sense of fun and play and mischief, and there was always very lighthearted. But at the same time, we had to shoot very quickly because of his age, and, you know, there were days where he was more energetic than others. And so, you know, it was very different of a kind of shoot, you know, having to work around his energy levels. And I didn't find out until after filming from his wife that apparently he'd been unwell leading up to the filming and was not very mobile. And nobody told me that. So I would just say, hey, can you walk from here to there and whatever? And he did. And she was really surprised. She said it was like he was drawing a rejuvenated energy from somewhere. And especially when we were filming at Wounded Knee, it just went up 2-3 gears beyond it. It was quite remarkable, really. Yeah, there's audio clips. I think you might have been sent links to audio clips, certainly, that we have available if they're of any use as well.
The world is not an accident. We don't always get to choose our parts. I called you, and you came. If you're too small or too weak, it is too late. The Creator has given you a task. You don't get to turn back just because you want to.
You know, I'd love to take a lot of credit for how the film is performing and whatever else, but, you know, the reason that it's, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes score of 4.7 out of 5, 95% is what it is. It's just because of Dave. I mean, he's touching people's hearts. It's an emotional vote. It's not a vote on my artistry as such, because it's a very simply told story. But I think it's such a beautiful thing, not just from an intercultural standpoint or anything like that, but it's so amazing to have one of our most amazing elders of any culture on screen. And it's something we don't do in cinema enough. The most interesting people out there are those that have lived, and yet, you know, cinema is the cult of youth. And so it's just so beautiful having this remarkable man stamp his imprint up there on the screen for everyone to share.
Well, once again, audiences can catch this on Monday, October 8th at the Wheeler Opera House. Tickets are online. Thank you so much once again, Steve Lewis Simpson, for speaking with Katie and Kay.
My great pleasure. Thanks for having me.